I have to apologize. I spilled a cup of water all over my paperwork here, so my agenda went away. But I know we're on Baker Lake. This is the briefing and public comment. So, who was going to give that? I don't have a backup right at the moment. Ron?
Edward Eliezer.
Okay.
And Mickey.
Okay, take it away.
Chair Carpenter, apologize. I'm just trying to share my screen right now to get the PowerPoint up. I'll be with you shortly. Still having some technical issues here with the share screen.
Do you want me to do it, Edward?
I think, can you see that, Nikki?
Yes.
Perfect. And then I'll just, is it showing?
Yeah, just go to slideshow view.
Slideshow. We good?
Yep.
Thank you. Apologize. Good afternoon, Chair Carpenter and Vice Chair Baker, as well as the commissioners. My name is Edward Eliezer. I'll be presenting today on Baker Sockeye. I'm the fish program manager for the North Puget Sound. It's my pleasure to be presenting today with Dr. Aga, our sockeye chum pink specialist. He's a leader in climate change science and modeling, and we look forward to his future engagement in this program. As it is one of our biggest success stories as it relates to hatchery and mitigation in recent times. So on this slide, we're going to share the history of Baker Sockeye, moving to the mitigation agreement and the current hatchery production, and then I'll pass it to Dr. Aga to show the science behind the scenes of our decision making as we move through the fishing season. I will then speak about the summary of 2020, as well as speak to the tension of harvest sharing. And then we'll end the presentation and share with you our future plans with our co-manager, stakeholders, and our constituents. This is a picture of the dam at the Lower Baker. We chose this picture to emphasize the nature of this program, as it is a hydro operation facility. And without mitigation in the form of fish transport up and down stream passage, as well as a hatchery, the Baker Sockeye Run would not be here. The Lower Baker Dam, built in 1925, blocked native fish passage and created Lake Shannon. At the time, a fish ladder was put in place and different hatchery programs were practiced through the years. These efforts proved to be insufficient, as we saw 99 sockeye return to the basin in 1985. As part of the most recent hydroelectric settlement agreement that was reached in 2008, a state-of-the-art hatchery was designed. Here's a picture of the facility as it looks today. As a result of this project, we saw adult returns that I mentioned of 99 returning sockeye in 1985, increased to over 50,000 fish in just 30 years, creating this popular fishery that is not only important to our anglers, but created a fishery that the tribes could exercise their treaty rights. We are currently working with Puget Sound Energy, Skagit co-managers, and our sister agencies in the development of phase two of this project. In phase two, it'll include a new rearing, a suite of new rearing ponds that would increase production by 7 million, as well as securing the program by installing backup water supply and predation control. The completion of phase two will bring us closer to realizing our co-manager goal of having a sustainable run of 100,000 sockeye returning to the system, It is my understanding that we are going to break ground in March of 2022. This slide shows the upward progression of the hatchery releases since the creation of the new hatchery. As you can see in the bars on the graph, the proportions of the natural or the proportions of the different rearing strategies for the program. The red shows the releases into Lake Shannon, blue into Baker Lake, and green is our delayed release program. By using a conservation-minded approach, knowing that the sockeye depend on the natural food in the lake, we are doing two things. One, increasing the population slowly, and two, studying the food web in the lake, as well as the biological conditions of the fish. And of note, we released a record amount of over 10 million fish during the pandemic. As the sockeye return, they swim through the first tribe's UNA. In Skagit Bay and through our river recreational fishery, through another tribe's UNA, and then finally arrive at the Baker River trap where they transported to either Baker Lake for natural production or natural spawning or for the fishery, or two, for the hatchery for broodstock collection. The migration happens over a short period of time, and by the time we have certainty in the preseason forecast, a majority of the sockeye are no longer in the bay for the tribes to harvest in these traditional fishing areas. It is the power of these lower river fisheries that can have a big harvest impact before we have certainty on the run size. It is that complexity that we have been working together hard on with the tribes and other stakeholders. For an example, in 2020, the tribes pushed back their fishery nearly 2 weeks due to shared conservation concerns in the preseason forecast. And now I turn it to Dr. Aga to talk about the science behind the decision making.
Thanks, Edward. Hello, chairman and commissioners, directors. My name is Dr. Mickey Aga. I'm a senior research scientist and salmon species specialist with WDFW. I'll be giving you a brief run through of how we approached the preseason in-season run size evaluation for Baker River sockeye in 2020. So I'll start off with this plot of total returning run size over time. So in yellow, we have the total run size observed in green, and in green, we have our forecasted run size. What's readily apparent from this plot, in my opinion, is that Baker sockeye are in the midst of a multi-year decline, starting about 5 to 10 years ago. So given this poor rate of return, our forecasts in past years have often missed the mark and overpredicted the run. And to address the recent low productivity in the Skagit system, we've turned to climate-based modeling, which we hoped would capture some of that error in previous models. And now I'll reference some literature, scientific literature later in the talk, but I want to premise that by saying that that our anomalous marine climate is dramatically impacting sockeye across the North Pacific, with the exception of Bristol Bay. So going into 2020, we really wanted to make sure we accounted for these recent years of exceptional low productivity and this low marine survival that we're seeing in recent times. Next slide. So again, for 2020, we wanted to ensure that we were taking a best available science approach to evaluating the return abundance. So we started out by exploring and comparing different climate factors that have been identified in the literature and have been associated with sockeye productivity, predominantly NPGO. And so for those that are not familiar, NPGO is the North Pacific Gyre Oscillation. It essentially provides an index of marine productivity, largely stemming from the upwelling of nutrients that promote zooplankton abundance, and that's also a critical resource for juvenile salmon as they make their out-migration. So in general, that relationship is where NPGO is positive, it's linked to an improved sockeye run, and when it's lower, it tends to correlate with poor sockeye runs. And unfortunately, in the recent times, we've been experiencing some, some fairly low MPGO indexes. So we then applied that MPGO into the model and to estimate early marine survival rates, and subsequently applied those rates into a sibling model to estimate the total predicted return. So I know some of this might be a little more technical, so I'll walk you through a sibling based regression model just in the case that you were interested in and wanted to know more about how we set up these modeling equations. Essentially, it's a climate-based sibling regression model. It takes a ratio of the smolt or ocean year one to adult ocean year two survival and regresses that with climate, with our climate factor, MPGO. So we then take that ocean year H2 return to predict ocean H3, hence a sibling regression. So the total return is the added twos plus threes, and that's how we generate our resulting forecast. Next slide, please. So how did climate-based modeling perform this year? Well, here's a plot of predicted run size using the MPGO base model. The mean output from the model is in green, and the total observed return are represented by the yellow dots. And you can see in 2020, we ended up about 30% under the total observed return. So we were on the conservative side, we underpredicted. But again, using this climate factor, it was a dramatic improvement from overprediction in previous years. And the total observed return of around 19,000 was well within the confidence bounds or likelihood bounds of the model. So now just to give you an idea, in the red box, I've fit the confidence bounds of the model, which is the predicted likelihood range, where 95% of the time we would expect the run size to fall within that range. And again, you can see how this model, this is a hindcast of the model back in time. And you can see how we are fitting this, the observed run sizes fairly well using this new modeling approach. So this is something we've kind of carried on to other salmon species, other regions. We're starting to integrate climate into return regression models. And this is actually dramatically improving our estimation. And hopefully we'll improve our management going forward. And so just in the Baker perspective, including MPGO based in this estimation performance model, it improved performance by 15 to 30%. It was a nice improvement from past. Next slide, please. So now I'll walk everyone through in-season evaluation of the sockeye run. So each year, sockeye returning to Baker Lake are trapped below two dams before they're transported, as Edward described. And once sockeye enter the Skagit River system, they take on average about 10 days to reach the trap. However, this rate at which they arrive is often climate and flow related. And as you can see in this figure to the right, we basically have an example of total sockeye counts over a single season. And I think it's readily visible that the return to the trap in green is highly variable through time and through the season. And what I mean by highly variable is that it's not just a simple bell curve. These salmon are coming in medium to large size packs, and they're reacting based on the marine climate as well as the terrestrial climate, the precipitation, the flow rate, glacial flow rate as well. And what I mean by highly variable is that the shaded region in the graph is two standard deviations from the mean. And it basically shows you the range of values we've documented in our historical data set. So another reason I show that is I just want to show that we have a rich historical data set. And that's going to play a role in this next step here that I'll talk about in terms of evaluating early in season run sizes. However, traditionally we use this trap data along with marine catch to generate an in-season update of abundance. It's essentially an update to our forecasted abundance that we had going into the year. And now just to give you some background on these in-season estimation models, they account for historical performance of the run, but they also integrate in-season catch data and trap data, and that dramatically improves the fit. Now, even in the most highly monitored systems, take the Fraser, for example, we tend to adjust from week to week as the run can be highly stochastic and it's separated by components, runtime and components. With the Fraser system, however, they have hydroacoustic systems set up lower in the river to get more precise estimation of the run. So just getting back to the Baker sockeye, without that technology lower in the Skagit system, the low sample size informing our in-season update model can be a little imprecise during the first few weeks, especially with these low total run sizes coming back. So that being said, we're continuing to work with our tribal co-managers, and I'm continuing to discuss with them the possible integration of a hydroacoustic technology system lower in the tributary, and that could potentially dramatically improve our early in-season estimation for the run. Next slide, please. In 2020, so given the variability in migration timing in recent years, we had to take a closer look at historical correlation with previous years to get a better grasp of the early component of the run. So, and what I mean by early component, I mean the first 2 to 3 weeks of this run size when we start seeing counts hit the salmon hit the trap. So to do so, I worked with some technical staff here at WDFW, and we developed a new trap count plot, which is accessible on our WDFW Baker website page. And I provided a link down there below. Anyone can access on their personal time, but essentially, this is a plot you'll see of the 2020 return in green, and in brown, we have the 2017 return. So you can select any year from the past that we have data and map it to the current return that's coming in right now. And that's in season, this figure or this graph will be updated live. So essentially in 2020, using this historical data, I started to evaluate the pattern of the run in the first few weeks. And essentially I used a correlation coefficient to link the incoming run to the set of historical runs. So essentially a basic pattern recognition technique. You have your available historical data and you have an incoming count, and you correlate your incoming count with the possible historical data. And when I generated these correlation coefficients through the first few weeks, we started to notice that the basic run pattern process was similar and closely tracking 2017. So now in 2017, we had around 16,000 sockeye hit the trap. And if you look closely at the figure, you start to see how 2020 run builds and peaks almost exactly how 2017 did. So in fact, it was actually a great reference for how the run would shape out. However, with the variability of these runs, you can't just rely on correlation. We had to rely back to our in-season estimation models as we got to the middle of the season, to the peak of the run. So we took a really cautious approach to evaluating the in-season models. And like Edward said, our co-managers were working together with us in unison to make sure that we were really confident in these in-season update models. And like I said before, their precision really, it improves with larger sample size. And indeed, the precision was fairly tight as it reached the peak of the run. So that's about the time that we adopted 18,000. And then on August 3rd, we predicted a run size of around 19,000, which ended up being 1% off our run reconstructed return of 19,157. So in the end, waiting that extra week to finalize an updated run size, it benefited us completely because we were right on the money with estimating the in-season run size and return. Next slide, please. So here I have basically run size estimates and forecast returns for sockeye stocks in Washington, British Columbia, and Alaska from 2020. And so green highlighting indicates an under-prediction, and red indicates an over-prediction. And what you'll see is that our prediction for Baker sockeye was right on track with how sockeye performed across the Pacific, again, with the exception to the Fraser sockeye run and Bristol Bay. We were about 30% above the forecast, and that was in line with returns to Lake Washington and Columbia River system. So I know every system is different. However, here I want to ensure you that what we are doing is we're keeping our best track of how the whole Pacific system is functioning rather than just an individual stock. And it also gives us a good idea of how unique some systems might be, like the Fraser, in comparison to the rest. Next slide. So where are we headed next with sockeye modeling in 2021? We're continuing to look at other environmental and biological factors, particularly competition level factors related to pink abundance and freshwater system factors, such as stream flow and temperature effects that impact smolts. And if we go into the next slide, please, Everett, I'm just gonna go into some of the literature that we've been referencing and essentially what we, how we're ensuring we're using the latest and best science. So getting back to pink abundance effects, I wanna again stress that we're reviewing the latest literature. And to give you an example, a few articles published last year suggested that sockeye productivity is tightly linked to warming ocean conditions and competition. So we are now exploring those relationships with Baker sockeye. And here I provided a figure on the right from one of the papers. In green, we have the West Coast sockeye stocks. In red, the Gulf of Alaska. And blue is Bering Sea. What this research essentially indicates, and you can see in the bottom component, is that there's a combination of pink salmon competition and warming climates that's having a negative impact on West Coast sockeye productivity. So we are really looking at this information and trying to integrate it into future forecasts, future evaluation of sockeye, and not just in the Baker system, but Washington in general. So I've been all over the place as the statewide representative, and we've been working on integrating these factors into models. Again, I also work with on the Fraser Panel Technical Committee, and right now we've been exploring how pink competition, it has had a dramatic impact on returning Fraser sockeye. Again, getting back to this warming climate. So this has been a relatively big topic over the past few years, especially since we identified that the blob was in fact affecting salmon returns. September 2020 of last year was actually one of the hottest months on record. And so we had a heat wave that was similar in effect to the blob. It wasn't as deep in sea surface temperature water, but it was in strength of the heat factor. So what we're exploring right now is essentially, we're trying to identify where exactly these salmon are. So another really interesting study that we're working on at WDFW is we're exploring the growth rates by scales, growth increments, and we're linking that to spatially indifferent climate factors to identify where these salmon are in time and how we can improve our productivity estimation going forward for really all of Washington's salmon species. Again, I just wanted to conclude that we're taking this conservation-minded approach only so that we can ensure sustainable populations into the future. So now I'll pass it back to Edward.
Thank you, Dr. Haga. Here you'll see the harvest sharing over the past 10 years. In the green, you can see where we under forecast and more fish are put into the lake, increasing the state's harvest opportunity. And in the yellow, conversely, you'll see where we over forecast and less fish are put into the lake, increasing the tribal catch. Over the past 10 years, we're fairly close, the state at 46% and the tribes at 54%. And it's our co-manager goal to get to a 50-50 split. And with the work that Dr. Haga is doing on the forecasting to get it closer and closer to what it actually is in reality, will reach us closer to that goal. In this slide, you'll see pictures from our unexpected fishery in 2020 that happened due to more sockeye coming back than forecast. On the top left corner, you'll see one of our own, Kyle Addicks. And then in the middle, one of our Puget Sound Steelhead advisors, Kurt Wilson, sharing a limit of sockeye from Baker Lake. In this fishery, we saw anglers put in an estimated 41,000 hours giving the state of Washington, mainly the local communities in the Skagit Valley, an economic boost of over $400,000. Future plans. This is our last slide that we wanted to talk about the future and what we're doing here. The first priority is to keep Baker Sockeye Harvest Equity in 2021 season setting process as a top priority. Number two, to continue to work with angler groups and tribes to improve connection. The third one is to continue to update, evaluate technical tools to manage this fishery. This includes co-managers actively pursuing hydroacoustic or sonar, working the Skagit as well with working with Puget Sound Energy to bring a chiller system online to use as a tool to estimate the natural production in the lake. Lastly, hatchery improvements, also known as phase two of the hatchery. With the design and permitting already being finalized, construction will take place in spring of 2022. Improvements to the hatchery will give us the potential to release an additional 7 million fry that will help us achieve our co-manager goal of having 100,000 sockeye returning to the Baker system in the near future. I will close this and ask if any of the commissioners have any questions for Dr. Aganai. Thank you for your time.
Are there any questions from the commissioners before we go to the open public comment segment? Commissioner Smith.
I just want to make a comment that this is really amazing science, and it makes me proud to be affiliated with this department. That's really cutting edge, and I'd love to see us doing more of that across the board. So great presentation. Thank you.
Pardon me. I have one question to Mickey. Mickey, that competition with pink salmon that you spoke about a few moments ago, how much of that is related to those privatized hatcheries throughout Southeast Alaska that they're producing?
Yes. So
significant numbers of pinks and flooding the North Pacific.
Absolutely. And right now we are working on putting together the pink hatchery output for the North Pacific, including what's coming out of Korea. And what we're finding is that hatchery output is dramatically impacting sockeye productivity. It's a factor that we're going to have to think about more closely going forward in the future.
Thank you. I've read about it, and it does seem to be very significant, and it sounds like it's starting to affect our West Coast availability. So thank you for that. All right, Nikki, how many folks do we have for public comment?
So far, I've got two hands up. I'll just roll into it. We'll now take public comment from attendees. As a reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes. If you're pre-registered, we ask you still raise your hand so we can see you in the queue. Everyone is currently muted. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you're on the phone, please press *9 and wait to hear you've been unmuted, and that's your indication it is your turn to speak. All right. First two folks, I've got Rob Larson and Frank Yerbeck. Go ahead, Rob.
All right, thank you. You're doing a great job at facilitating this tough job. Appreciate your efforts. Mr. Chairman and commissioners, this is a fantastic fishery and a lot of fun. And in past years, fair and equitable sharing has been kind of a substantial issue. 2020 saw some improvements in the process that resulted in much more balanced sharing. I would like to ask that we continue what happened in 2020. There were regular weekly sharing open conversations between Washington and Department of Fish and Wildlife, the co-managers and sportsmen happening as we move forward is very important. Allowing for in-season forecasts is essential to get fair sharing. And I think that was great that happened in 2020. Using sonar would be even better. I see some real benefits to that. The sockeye fishing in Baker is a great family-friendly fishery, and it's surrounded by some of nature's most stunning scenery, and it must be preserved. I'm really excited to hear that it actually is going to hopefully increase with the new hatchery production. I think that's just wonderful. With Cedar River sockeye, on the verge of extinction, any surplus sockeye eggs from this need to go to restoring that, recovering that historic run. Surplus, I guess, how do you define surplus? And I don't want to take them from the fishery in the lake, but at a certain point in time, probably sometime, I don't know, the middle of August, any fish that return after that time that are above and beyond what we need to take the hatchery broodstock and meet the spawning escapement of natural production in Baker, I would think would be a great place to use those fish. And I know that we have done a year of testing with those, and I would just like to really see that continue, because I'm involved with the Cedar River Council, and I just, we're going to have to do some heroic efforts to try to save our Lake Sockeye, our Lake Washington Sockeye. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And Mickey and Edward, thank you for putting this together. It was a good job. I'm an engineer, so I like seeing facts and data, and I thought that was good. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Rob. But next, Nikki, please.
Next, we have Frank Urebeck, and that's the last hand I have up. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay. Chairman Carpenter, Vice Chairman Baker, and others on the commission, Frank Urebeck. I'm a conservation and sport fishing advocate who's engaged with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Sport Fishing Group since 2013 in pursuit of fairness and equity in the sharing of harvestable Baker Lake sockeye. Over that eight-year period, tribal harvest has exceeded non-tribal harvest by more than 26,000 sockeye. However, in part because of a record low preseason forecast for 2020 and a better than expected actual run last summer, some of the long-term imbalance was reduced. A preseason forecast is critical. When we have more fish come back than forecast, then the sports seem to gain something. When we've had forecasts that were less than forecast, then it goes the other way. So the getting the better forecasting is critical. And I appreciate what Mickey's trying to do. And that's very critical to the whole process. I want to note that last summer we experienced the second lowest return of the 11 years that there has been a sport fishery in Baker Lake. I have taken my grandsons and even my wife fishing for sockeye, because as Rob said, it's a beautiful setting. It's just amazing. And so, in fact, on one occasion, I don't know if Commission Chairman Carpenter remembers, I came by his place of business with my grandson. I think it was 2011, and we had our limits of fish, and we were excited to show those off. And I'm sure it was mostly my grandson. I want to say that Edward has worked hard with several of us representing sport fishing organizations to improve harvest sharing and sharing sport fishing perspective on key harvest management issues with the three Skagit Basin tribes that fish on Baker Lake sockeye. Edward has been very open to discussing public views and information with the tribes. He's always available and responsive to requests for information and for engaging on key issues such as in-season run for assessments. I believe that has made a significant difference in improved relations between the department and the sport fishing community. We've already begun working on the information for the 2021 season, and we'll be having a conference call with Edward and perhaps Mickey on Friday next week, February 5th. We are optimistic that harvest management of sockeye is moving in the right direction. Lastly, and this is what Rob mentioned a little bit, the difficult issue of sharing surplus Baker Lake eyed eggs is still a work in progress. Surplus eggs were transferred to the Skokomish Tribal Saltwater Park hatchery located on Hood Canal near the mouth of the Skokomish River during 4 years, 2016, 17, 18, and 19. Last year, there was no surplus eggs. I believe that the 4 years of adult returns will be sufficient to judge whether or not the Skokomish sockeye introduction experiment will be successful. The first adult return that occurred last year was not very impressive, with only about 0.05%, 0.05% egg to adult survival. Surplus eggs were also provided to the department's Issaquah hatchery in 2018 for extended rearing before releasing the larger juveniles into the Cedar River for imprinting as part of the attempt to increase adult returns to the Cedar. The Cedar River sockeye run is collapsing and on the verge of extinction, as suggested in Linda Mapes' New Year's Day front page Seattle Times article. In the future, all available surplus lake, Baker Lake sockeye eggs must go to the Cedar River run. This conclusion was shared the past Tuesday during the Cedar River Council meeting that Rob alluded to. It's ironic that Baker Lake sockeye may be used to help rescue the Cedar River sockeye run, which once produced significant Lake Washington tribal and sport fisheries, as Baker sockeye were used to introduce the Cedar run nearly a century ago. Thank you for your time. And again, the commission, I appreciate every one of you. I spent more time on this I ever have, and I'm tired just watching you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Frank. Thank you for your comments. Okay, that wraps up this agenda item.